Our political commentators are with us in the Auckland studio. Matthew Hooton, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Mike Williams, good morning.
Good morning.
Matthew is an Auckland-based consultant and lobbyist. Mike is a former president of the Labour Party, now CEO of the New Zealand Howard League. One story dominated last week: the Labour Party's handlings of allegations made by several people against a now former staff member in the Labour leader's office at Parliament. The senior politicians had been able or were attempting to leave this as the responsibility of the party, and particularly the party president. The whole thing exploded last Monday with a very detailed first-person account on the spin-off website, and it is now front and centre. Front and centre, a political problem for the Prime Minister and for senior MPs. Matthew Hooton, what do you make of it all?
Well, it's the worst week, as most people think, I think, that the Prime Minister has ever had. It's the first time that the reliability of her public statements have come under very serious challenge. It just seems impossible to believe, as she asserted, that the first she heard about the nature of these allegations was on Monday when she read about it on the spin-off. And from her perspective, there's how competently it was managed by her staff and herself, and also this question of why is she denying never having heard of these allegations? Is she telling the truth, that she has lived in this almost bubble where most of the political tragics in this country have been talking about this matter, the nature of the allegations? I was on TVNZ Breakfast with John Campbell more than a month ago, and we used the phrase, as had been used by Barry Soper, that these were allegations of a very serious criminal nature up to including rape. And that was on TV, that was in the New Zealand Herald, it was on News Talk ZB. And the idea that the only person in the political establishment in this country who didn't know the nature of what was being discussed was the Prime Minister, I find is completely implausible. But if it is, if she is telling the truth, in some senses, that's even worse, because it suggests that she is deliberately or otherwise detached from what's going on in New Zealand politics and, you know, and the Labour Party and her own office.
Mike.
Well, I have absolute confidence that the Prime Minister is telling the truth. And I think it depends on how you classify the allegations and the... It's important to read her press statement when Nigel Howarth resigned, where she says, "This morning I was provided some of the correspondence from complainants written to the party several months ago. It confirms that the allegations were extremely serious." Now, I am not part of the Wellington rumour mill, and the kind of allegations I was hearing were quite trivial, of the ponytail pulling variety of sexual harassment, not the sexual assault that is detailed in the spin-off thing. And it appears that that is what Nigel Haworth believed. And in the spin-off, he's quoted as saying, "It's important to be clear that none of the complaints to the party investigated related to sexual assault."
Mike, that's the problem.
It is the problem.
No. The problem is the semantics. And either we believe what Mr. Haworth is saying, or we believe what a number of complainants or people who knew the complainant who was covered in most detail in Monday on the spin-off knew. Or we're in a situation where Mr. Haworth is asking us to believe the semantics are sufficient.
That's not true, Catherine. It's whether that complaint was actually made to the committee. And that's where I've got to be very careful about what I say, and it's got to be left to the QC, Maria Dew,
I think. Is a complaint a complaint when it is formally made and accepted, or is a complaint when someone tells you what happened to them?
It depends on what they tell you. It depends on what they tell you. If it is of the ponytail-pulling variety, Do you personally, Catherine, regard that as a sexual assault?
What of the emails that were sent and that made their way, that correspondence made their way to the Prime Minister? Again, I suppose we can say attachments that have headlines like sexual assault weren't attached. That can happen. But whatever correspondence made its way to the Prime Minister was enough for her to move last
week. And she did exactly the right thing. Because,
well, how is it the right thing if you're somehow saying that there was no knowledge that the allegations, was no knowledge that the allegations included those of a sexual nature?
I didn't say that, Catherine. I said that the complaint was not made to the committee. Now, it appears that what was sent...
Well, that then was very convenient for the Prime Minister, wasn't it? That's the issue. She must have known the nature of these complaints.
No.
She must have known.
She would have to know what the committee knew.
So when Mike Hosking asked her about, on his live radio show on the 6th of August, about the allegations of sexual assault by his staff, when it was reported in the New Zealand Herald that there were allegations involving her staff of serious offences up to and including rape, when that was broadcast on national TV on the 8th of August, we're saying that the Prime Minister just thought, oh, I'll ask Nigel Harworth, is there any complaints about rape or sexual assault, and Nigel Harwell says, oh, not that I know of, and she says, oh, there we go. Great, terrific, well, end of the matter.
Pretty much what I
Well, that's disgraceful behaviour by the Prime Minister.
I don't think it is. I think
so, in other words, she thinks Mike Hosking and Barry Soper made up allegations of rape or sexual assault by her staff.
Hang on a minute. That's not what I'm saying at all.
What happened
was that an email went to the entire press gallery. No one published a thing for 3 weeks while people understandably went about trying to speak to people and to ascertain more. 6th of August, you have the first broadcast, limited in nature, talking about how Labor was having to reinvestigate how it handled the nature of a complaint. However, what is undeniable is that the media knew, and it is impossible, Mike, to believe that those working in and around the Beehive who were asked about things did not know that in the mix of these allegations were complaints of a sexual offence nature.
I think probably that Jacinda asked Nigel, was a complaint made of a sexual nature?
Then that is limiting the question in a way...
Well, he gave the answer... None of the complaints to the party investigated related to a sexual assault.
Well, so she didn't say to anybody else under that scenario, she doesn't say, hang on, why am I being asked by the media about this? The Chief Press Secretary, Andrew Campbell, who listeners will remember, a very well-connected person, he never said, actually, there's all these issues around much more serious things, Prime Minister.
Well, that's not what was reported, according to Nigel Haworth, to the committee.
Now, why did she move last week then in a way that saw his departure, having received correspondence? That correspondence, I have not laid eyes on it to see whether it was sent. I don't know whether the attachment with the headlines that had the word sexual in it was sent. But whatever happened last week was enough for her to move, Mike.
Yeah, obviously. That Nigel had got this and not responded to it, and obviously assured her that what he
said. So why did he have to resign?
That he misled her, or she perceived him to have misled her.
Well,
perfectly proper under the circumstances.
If that's all true, then it seems that the spin-off has a remarkably powerful role in our society, that it can repeat things that have been in the New Zealand Herald, in more detail, admittedly. It can repeat things that have been on Newstalk ZB many, many times. And as a result of that, the Prime Minister gets rid of the President of the Labour Party?
Well, no, sure, because it was actually the documentation, as I understand it, was what TV3's political editor had in her hands, which was the emails, and that was subsequently provided. Look, we're into the thickets of this. The bottom line is, Mike, and you have worked in and around that place long enough and in and around other leaders to know, you don't just go to the president and say, oh, I'm hearing this stuff, or this stuff is being broadcast, or this email got sent to the entire press gallery. What investigation has there been to substantiate it? You can't just park it with the party like that for two reasons. One, because of the seriousness of it and the party that you lead, and two, because of what happened last week.
Well, the point is, of course, she didn't just park it with the party. She required the president to resign.
No, that was last
week. Exactly the right thing to do.
I'm talking back at the time that email was first received. and that people were first approaching her about it.
Well, I keep repeating, she would have received the assurance.
And
that
is
it
that
is
enough?
Important to be clear.
Is that enough?
Well, you've got to trust people, and if the president of your party tells you none of the complaints investigated related to sexual assault, you would tend to believe him, particularly if he's had a committee of three people examine this issue very carefully. Now, we will see what really
happened.
We don't
know what they examined, Mike, because we keep being told that the complainants were told we cannot investigate allegations of a sexual nature.
Well,
that doesn't mean you can eliminate them from having been told to you.
Well,
and
this is where we've got to wait for the QC.
No, we don't have to wait at all for the QC. And besides, the Prime Minister is never going to release that report from the QC.
Well, do you know that? Do you know that?
If the report is of any use to the readers of it, the Prime Minister and the Labour Party Council, then it will have information in it that is very, very sensitive to the complainants, and it will not be released. And National had the same issue with its cultural review. If the report is not just a whitewash and a cover-up, it contains things which means it can't be released. It would be unimaginable that this report would go into the details of the nature of these offences and then the Labour Party would just release it. So we're not going to see that report. There's no suggestion, no one's ever suggested we'll see that report, and I don't think we should see it. But it is possible. Look, if Mike's right that the Prime Minister can be relied upon as having been truthful this last week, then that leads us to the situation that perhaps she does keep herself in a bubble. And she does have a record of deliberately arranging things to keep information from her. We saw that with the scandal around her first chief of staff, who was at the same time as being chief of staff and at the same time as being one of her closest confidants, is a shareholder and director of a lobbying company. And that led to questions of conflict of interest. And the Prime Minister's answer said, oh, no, we managed that conflict of interest because I don't know and I've never asked and I've never been told who his clients are, who he was on retainer from when he was working for me as chief of staff. Now, I would have thought that it's highly relevant. I don't think managing a conflict of interest situation by saying, oh, I just don't want to be told, is managing it. For example, if you were seeking advice from your chief of staff on whether New Zealand should tilt towards China or the United States or how we should manage those relationships, I would have thought you would want to know if the person that you were seeking advice from was on a retainer from, I don't know, Huawei or Lockheed Martin. But the Prime Minister's line on that matter, and it seems on this, is she just keeps all this information away from her so that she deliberately puts herself in a bubble. And that's the alternative if we're to accept what she was telling the truth. I don't believe it for a second,
she
by the
certainly
way.
Wouldn't be the first to try and separate party and parliamentary.
It's not a party.
No,
a party
I understand
man.
That. I understand
well,
that.
I in don't this know instance, many people do.
In this instance, you could argue that it is a party matter.
No, you couldn't. That's the first bit of misinformation that they have put about.
Well, it's failed them dismally. And if
she
I could finish my sentence, I'll explain it. In some levels, you do say this is party matter, party business. By the time it had reached the level of what the press gallery was investigating and what was being publicly reported and what surely to God her own advisers and staff were checking out, by the time it reached that level, it was always going to end up being the responsibility of the leader of the Labour Party, Mike. It's not a party operational issue.
Well, it became a party matter when the complainant laid a complaint with the Labour Party. And if you bother to read the Constitution, and very few of the media have recently, you discover that that three-person committee is described in the Constitution as to how you handle a complaint. So that was perfectly normal
it doesn't
and
mean,
correct.
It doesn't
that the
mean
Prime
that
Minister,
the leader of the Labour Party doesn't have an interest in the culture of her party and in how party officials are managing
that. Nobody said
that,
but you would trust these people.
I'm not saying she should have investigated it, but what I am saying is she cannot just park it as being a party matter, because we saw last week why it is far from that.
Well, I'm sure she was given the same information as I was given and everyone was given by Nigel Howarth that none of the complaints to the party investigated related to a sexual
assault. A politically astute thinker would be saying, why the hell are the media investigating all this? Why am I being asked these questions repeatedly? Not just for one day or 2 days till people decide it was some kind of a crank. It clearly wasn't. It was persisting. It was being investigated. People were getting further. And then it goes into the House and you've got the parliamentary process giving it credibility. That's where it becomes political and you realise...
Oh, no, I don't agree with that, Kat. I think it's political right from the start, particularly given the Me Too movement, and I'm quite certain Jacinda kept a close eye on the situation and was told that the allegations were in the nature of, you know, ponytail tugging. That's what the people tell me, that these very serious allegations came out in the spin-off.
That's not the correct narrative. That's not what happened. She was asked about it on the 6th of August. And the other thing is, the reason it's most clearly not a party matter is that she is the de facto employer of the person who has now resigned. Now, there is a cute little, in parliamentary HR, there is a cute little myth that these people, like political advisors in the Prime Minister's office, the leader of the opposition's office, are employed by someone else.
Well, the Speaker, who actually says he is the employer and has said that in Parliament, so I don't know if we can call it a myth.
It is a legal myth, because what that allows is for the fire at will clause to happen. And what can happen is the Minister or the Prime Minister can say, I have lost confidence in this person, and they can be fired at will. And they wouldn't be able to be fired under New Zealand Labour law if it wasn't for this myth that parliamentary services were the employer. It is like you're at a law firm and you work for a law firm and you lose the confidence of your main client, you can therefore be fired by the law firm. But it is entirely a myth. There is no suggestion that the Speaker or parliamentary services would start telling Jacinda Ardern or Simon Bridges who they were allowed to have as their staff. She was the employer. She was able at any time to activate the fire at will clause in this contract.
Let's look at where it goes from here then. And Matthew, do you see, you're saying this report, this QC report, won't be released. It is very interesting just reading one article at the weekend, Alison Moore's article in the Sunday Star Times, that is clearly very well informed by at least one of those in a group who have been raising issues about the culture and behaviour. This goes back to the summer camp and before, about what their motives are and about what they want. And certainly in that reporting, in that article, they're not gunning for the Prime Minister. They are gunning for real change. Those who will be gunning for the Prime Minister are undoubtedly the opposition in Parliament. And we are yet to see what impact this has had reputationally for her and among the wider public. What do you see as the key stages from here, Matthew?
Well, it will die, won't it? There'll be another issue that will come up. And until this report, the Maria Dew QC report, is completed and the Prime Minister at least chooses to talk about it, if not release it, it's going to go away as an issue. She's at the UN this week, but it's going to damage her in a similar way to the way Kiwi Build has damaged her. That if the Labour Party promises a massive infrastructure policy at the next election, no one's going to take it seriously. And similarly, this will harm the Prime Minister's reputation for telling the truth and, of course, specifically the Prime Minister's commitment to the Me Too movement, which is quite extraordinary. So that has to harm her brand. Already in end of August, before all this broke, before the spin-off article, and the Prime Minister got deeply involved in it, Labour was already down from 47% to 38% in the UMR polls. So it's lost 9 points in the polls in 3 months. And the Prime Minister's net favourables have plunged from 51% to 31%. That was prior to this. So there is a sense that the public are finally seeing through the sort of fairy tale Jacinda mania image that the Prime Minister has had and are focusing more on issues of delivery on which the government has failed on every measure.
What happens with the party now, Mike? You mentioned its constitution. I mean, I think the Prime Minister has said, however it operates, it's not satisfactory, and certainly its means of investigating complaints aren't. What is it that will happen to replace Nigel Haworth, and what's the process going to be, and who's going to be picking up here and presumably trying to get progress that gets these matters out of the headlines? Not the matters that have happened already, but any further incidents.
Well, look, I'd agree with one thing. This is a mess, and it's a political party-generated mess, not a government mess. It's a sort of Jamie Lee Ross mess. And again, as Matthew said, these things pass. I don't know about his numbers. I don't know where they get them from. But I think it's probably timely that the government sort of grabbed itself and got its act together. What happens now, the media had all sorts of various ideas about what happens to the presidency of the Labor Party. I heard Mihi Forbes say yesterday, well, the rule book says the senior vice president succeeds. There is no succession.
It's an interim step, isn't it, the Prime Minister?
No, it's not there in the Constitution at all. In page 117, it reads, if the position of president becomes vacant before the next annual conference, the General Secretary must, within 14 days of the position becoming vacant, invite the constituent organisations with voting rights to provide nominations for the position of president to the General Secretary. Now, that has to happen before the annual conference, which I'm told is the 29th of November in Whanganui. So that's something that will have to be addressed by the party quite soon. I would say this. If I was president of that party for a long time, I would not have gone down that route of investigation at all. I think the mistake is right at the beginning when they treat it as a discipline problem. I wouldn't have touched that with a barge pole.
Okay. You wanted to touch on another couple of matters out of last week. Are they near and dear to your heart? It's the history.
Well, I was delighted to see New Zealand history going to be taught in schools. I think that is a big step in the right direction. I was lucky. I went to Hastings Intermediate School, and the principal there was a guy called Langford, who was mad keen on New Zealand history, and he made sure it was taught at both the Form 1 and Form 2 levels. So it's just a piece of good news, I think, that we are going to become more conscious of our own history starting 2023. So let's give the government a few points for that.
Okay. Thanks, both of you, Matthew Hoot and Mike Williams.